Maybe the key to doing well at Unbound is to do a 2-week high volume block 3 weeks out, and then the week of do an intensity block leading into the race.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of the Matchbox Podcast, powered by Ignition Coach Co. I'm your host, Adam Sabin, and this week on the show, we're diving first into the topic of high-volume block training. This training approach is not necessarily new. However, in more recent years, we've seen it become more widely adopted as gravel and ultra-distance racing has become more popular, and we see pros like Keegan Swenson taking the high-volume training method and having great success. Then we dive into the topic of high versus low-carb dieting and how it affects performance and longevity. Today's show is also brought to you by Flow Formulas. Don't wait until the week of your big event to finally start dialing in your race fueling. Get on top of your nutrition game now by heading over to flowformulas.com and make sure to use the discount code MATCHBOX when checking out. And as always, if you like what you hear, please share this with your friends and leave us a 5-star review. And if you have any questions for the show, you can drop us an email at matchboxpod@gmail.com with email title The Matchbox Podcast. Or you can head over to ignitioncoachco.com and fill out the Matchbox Podcast listener question form. All right, let's get into it. Okay, first topic this week comes in through our listener question form. This is from Tyler. I'm looking to experiment with a 2-week high volume block this season. If my current weekly volume is around 10 hours per week, how much volume do you think I can realistically add on for this block? Thanks, Tyler.
Oof. So many people asked me about that after my last video when I talked about high volume blocks. So I guess we can talk about it some more. So what I was talking about in that video was I was kind of referencing block periodization, and we've talked about block periodization plenty on this podcast, but for those who don't know, it's when you kind of block a lot of high intensity into 1 week, and then afterwards you compensate by having less intensity in the following weeks to recover from that effort. So, you know, instead of 2 high intensity days in 1 week, you might do 4 or 5 high intensity days in 1 week, which is obviously a pretty stressful week. So I experimented with this last year, and I talked about it in my last video of doing that, but with volume instead of intensity. So, you know, if your typical training week is 15 hours, maybe you do 30-hour week or 35-hour week or something.
That's a big jump. That's double.
Well, dude. Here's the thing. For it to be,
I thought you were going to say 20, and then you said 30. And
no. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I think for it to be effective, it needs to be a big jump. Actually, it can't be just a modest increase. I would say that probably double your normal training volume for most people. It sounds like a ton, and you're going to have to take the recovery afterwards very seriously. But just like doing 5 intensity sessions in 1 week is a big jump from 2 intensity sessions, it needs to be a sizable jump in the amount of volume you're doing for this to take place.
But our listener, Tyler, has the availability to do a 2-week block. So I don't think, I think after the first week of 30 hours, he'd be smashed.
Yeah, potentially. He has 10 hours. My example was a 15 hour per week person. He has 10 hours per week. So maybe we back it down a little bit.
2 weeks of 20 hours would be.
That's probably doable.
A lot.
I think he can handle it if he's doing 10 hour weeks.
He could do that. If it's mostly now, volume.
Now, I want to stress this. You have to take the recovery afterwards very seriously, and there should be probably 2 or 3 weeks afterwards where you're not. For example, if you're trying to do this leading into a high volume event, which is what I would recommend even using this for, like for example, Unbound, I would probably end that block 3 weeks out from Unbound, so you have plenty of time to recover. And you need to take the recovery super seriously, because you can totally botch this by not taking the recovery seriously.
Do you know this from personal experience?
I do know it from personal experience. But I also know from personal experience that if you do it correctly, there are sizable increases in your fitness. In fact, I, this is what I talk about in my last video. This is just a personal anecdote for me. And I think that what probably differentiates me from most people is that my fitness level is quite high already. And particularly when I did the block, my fitness level was very high going into it, which I think is very important. I think that this actually works better for people who are already at a high fitness level. And it's not some, just like intensity block periodization, this is not something that I recommend for novice riders. This is something that I recommend for seasoned athletes who've already gone through normal training and are maybe hitting a plateau and are really looking for trying to do something to break through their current fitness ceiling, right? That's the kind of person that this applies to, not a person who just started training a year ago and wants to try it because it sounds, I don't know, hard and they want to challenge themselves.
Right. You know, yeah. And that's what I was going to mention too, that you, you sort of touched on there is, even though you're a seasoned athlete, you still came into that high volume block in a pretty fit state. You weren't using that as like a crash course to like get back into training after your off season. Like you, you have to be fairly well conditioned in order to handle that kind of load. So this isn't the type of thing you want to do like early into your base training. And I think that's where a mistake that a lot of athletes make with training camps is they do these training camps in January when they're like just getting back into training. And, you know, one, the quality of their training during that block is probably going to suffer because they can't handle the day in, day out. But also the recovery afterwards is going to hit them, you know, or is going to be more of a challenge. You know, it's going to take longer to recover. So, you know, it's something that you want to be strategic with where you're placing this. And I think it makes sense to do it closer to an event like you're talking about versus doing this early on into your training season, because of the, you want those you know, more acute adaptations to still be in effect come race day, you know, unless you're really just trying to get a fitness bump for a training block. But I think that has more problems.
And I don't think this works for every type of racing. If you're more of a crit racer or cyclocross or cross country mountain bike, then I would recommend, if you're going to try block periodization, which again, not recommended for everyone, I would recommend block periodization with intensity for those specific events. But if you're training for Unbound or, you know, some other long event that's similar to that, you may want to try block periodization with volume.
Yep.
And I would say that as a very general rule, maybe double your normal volume is a good place to start. So if this person does 10 hours a week, try doing 20 hours a week. You know, this person is thinking about doing, making it a 2-week block, which is not uncommon for block periodization with volume. The argument could be made that if you're doing 2 weeks back to back, you would not want to double it. So maybe, I don't know, maybe do like 17, 18 hours.
And you're still taking rest days and like throughout those 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. The way that I like to do it is instead of making it 14 days, I make it 15 days. And that way I've got 4 3-day blocks with and 3 rest days. So it's 3 days on, 1 day off, 3 days on, 1 day off, 3 days on, 1 day off, 3 days on, and then a big off.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Are they doing any intensity during the those 2 weeks
of high volume? My suggestion is that if you are attempting this for the first time, it would probably be better to make it just volume, because you really want to be careful about not overdoing it. But that's not a blanket rule. You can add intensity into a volume block. And if you're a higher level athlete, I would suggest that, especially if you're gearing up for a race. But standard rules on intensity, like doing 2 intensity sessions per week, is probably what you should shoot for. I did experiment with placing the intensity day at the end of the 3-day block instead of the beginning of the 3-day block, and it actually worked pretty well for me. And the same thing that happens with block periodization with intensity, where, you know, you actually feel pretty good on the bike and are putting out pretty good numbers even late into that week. Like on the, I've had some of my best workouts on the 5th day of a block week, meaning I've had 4 intensity days already in the week and I'm putting out better numbers than I've ever put out in my life. And it's the 5th day. you know, a lot of people call that the stage race effect because the same thing happens to some people during stage racing. And I would say that in this situation where your training volume is much higher than it normally is, the same thing could happen here too. And you could actually be feeling really good and be putting out really good numbers on that third day.
Then why don't you just do 4 days of intervals before Unbound?
I think that, so I've actually considered that. I literally just said
your best numbers of your life.
Yeah.
I was going to second that because, yeah, go ahead, Dylan.
So this is what I'll say to that. I actually have considered that because I've experienced this and I've said, okay, and I've actually done races on the fifth day of a block week, right? I've done intervals for 4 days and then on the fifth day I do a race and it's some of the best power numbers in a race I've ever seen, right? So I'm thinking, okay, if this is the case, then maybe my taper week should just be me doing intervals all week leading into the race, and then I'll smash it during the race.
It'll be an untaper.
But your fourth or fifth day wasn't a 200-mile race.
I don't know if I would do that before
Unbound.
This is what I was going to say about it, is I think that it's a little bit too big of a risk.
Yeah.
Right? You could feel amazing, but you could also feel completely
terrible.
Yeah. And I think that it's much less risky to do a standard taper, because if you do a standard taper and you do it right, you know you're going to feel good at the end of that taper. Like, you're going to feel good and your power numbers are going to be good. And if you do this approach, I would say it's kind of a gamble. You could feel amazing, but you could also feel awful. So, and when we're talking about a big race, like an A priority race, I'm not necessarily willing to take that gamble.
Dude, I'll do it for you this year.
Okay.
I'll take the gamble.
I'm just like, I feel like it would be something worth trying before a shorter event. But why Unbound? It's just so long. Like,
just because Unbound says A event. I mean, that's...
Yeah,
I risk it for the biscuit kind of event.
Right. I mean, I get where you're coming from, Caitlin. That week... would be an insane training load, because Unbound itself is already an insane training load.
It doesn't necessarily have to be, though, right? I mean, your intervals could be shorter days, right?
Like, yeah.
You know, it kind of follows a normal taper. It's just, you're just condensing those days stacked on instead of spacing them out by, you know, a day in between.
I guess what I'm saying is Unbound already takes quite a bit to recover from. And if you did a block week leading into Unbound, I mean, I don't know how long that would take. You'd be absolutely smoked when you came out of that hole.
Go ahead, Caitlin.
I was going to say, in your block week, the duration of the intensity efforts, aren't they similar? Like, the overall sessions, mm-hmm. aren't they similar?
You're not necessarily doing shortened intervals like Adam is suggesting.
Well, I'm just saying you're not doing a high volume week. Like, it's, you know, if you're tapering down from a high volume training load, like your workout days might just be 90 minutes to 2 hours. You know, you're not doing 4 or 5 hour days.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, my point was, yes, on the fourth or fifth day of a block week, you feel good, but that fourth or fifth day matches the previous days, is what I'm saying. So doing Unbound is so different from those previous efforts in the week.
I do agree with that.
It sounds like something great for a cross-country mountain bike rider if they're doing, you know, hour and a half, 2 hour workouts, and then they have their hour and a half race. Like, that's probably something worth trying. But yeah,
I do see where your head is at there, but I will say that this is also anecdotal, but I one time did a block week where the last day five of the block week was a race, and it was a 150 mile gravel race that took 7 hours, and I won the race and my power numbers were amazing and my legs felt great. So
science.
Okay.
Science.
Right there. That's science.
It's funny you bring this up, because I was actually going to bring up the same thing, because I did an impromptu block week last week. It was going to be super nice outside, and it was supposed to be a rest week, and I was like, I got to take advantage of this week. And I was like, I didn't really want to do higher volume because I didn't have as much time to train. Mm-hmm. So I just did a block week, and day four on my eighth of 8 4-minute efforts. I set a, well, I was 2 watts from setting a 5-minute power record. Mm-hmm.
And this you is did what I'm talking about.
Crazy.
And you did, I mean, like, 8 of them?
Yeah.
Wow, that's mm-hmm. a lot.
Yeah. And every single like, one was like getting better and better. And then I just sent it on the last one. I was like, let me see yeah. what I got. But yeah, I mean, it made me think. I was like, dude, this, I wish today was a race because I.
Yeah, but what was the ribbon. Number? Come on, dude. Tell us the number.
427.
Nice.
429
eighth,
is my.
That's on the 8th interval, people.
Yeah.
Not the first one.
The on eighth. The 4th yeah. day of intervals in a row.
I have done some crazy things late into a block week. Like mm-hmm. The hardest KOM to get in this area is the 276 climb. It's like a 35-minute climb on the road. I got that KOM on, I think, day 4 of a block week.
I'm sorry, he has to try and one-up you, Adam.
I'm not trying to one-up you. I'm trying to add to your point that
yeah.
crazy things have happened late into a block week.
Yeah. No, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I had the same thought. I was like, maybe... And I think I'm going to try it this year. I'm going to try putting a block week leading into
a race.
Some kind of hard race, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe the key to doing well at Unbound is to do a 2-week high volume block 3 weeks out, and then the week of do an intensity block leading into the race.
That would be wild.
I don't recommend that, people. Don't that's way too risky. But
my experience,
I mean, you get two
block.
Throwaway races, so who cares?
True.
My experience.
I'll do it at the rad.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. My experience with block periods was not the same as y'all's. I did it and was like, why did I do that? Like, I might have felt good on my 4th or 5th day, but I did it like a month out from my A race, and mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you if it helped or didn't help. I didn't get a good result, but I don't necessarily know if that was from fitness or not. But I remember just sitting at the end of the season thinking, like, why did I do that? Like, I know what works. So why would I like try this Hail Mary of like, I'm going to do this crazy thing and maybe it'll elicit some crazy,
I mean, that's
results
why.
And maybe I'm desperate. But I remember thinking back, like, and I was thinking I should have just stuck with what I know that I know works and just stayed rock steady, like steady. Like,
so I wonder if maybe you overdid the block week.
So I don't know. I think the opposite. I think I overdid the recovery after the block week, and I didn't have enough in between the block week and my rest or my mm-hmm. race. Mm-hmm. So I had a whole month of like
yeah.
very low training load. So I think I overdid the recovery afterwards.
Drew, it's good that you throw in this anecdote because we've been really pumping up block weeks here for the first part of this podcast, and I've been talking about crazy numbers. But I have also screwed up block weeks. I have had some of my worst results after a block week that didn't go right. And this is why I say it's risky. It's not like you're going to do a block week and you're going to feel amazing and you're going to get the best results of your life. You could very well screw it up, and it could be the worst results you get. You could be completely overtrained, and come your race day, you know, you don't even want to do the race because you're so, you're so overtrained and you're lacking motivation. So,
and I feel
that's
like
also a possibility.
You say like you could screw it up, but like there's not like I feel really comfortable doing a normal periodized training program, mm-hmm. but block periodization is not as like clear. Like it's not as black and white as a normal training structure. Like it's almost like, I don't know, you have to figure it out for yourself. Like, oh, do I need more recovery or less recovery? Or was the block week big enough or small enough? Or do I do high volume or high intensity? And to me, it was like, why go through all that if I can just go through normal periodization? Like if this guy, mm-hmm. if I were coaching this guy and he said this to me, it's probably because he has a 2-week vacation. So he's trying to maximize those 2 weeks, in which case I get it. But in the grand scheme of things, if you're training 10 weeks an hour, I would rather see that person get up to 12 to 15 hours a week consistently rather than 2 big weeks.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, I would rather argue for that to happen. And let's not do this crazy 2-week thing, but let's just bump up your overall training load every week.
I would agree with that, if that's a possibility for this person. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Cool. And anything else to add there on block periods?
No, I don't think so. We've talked about block periods a ton. I've talked about block periods a ton.
I think this is the first time we've touched on volume block periods, though. So I think that was cool. Yeah.
There's less research on volume block periods. So a lot of this is coming from personal experience right now, not from research. Whereas when I talk about intensity blocks, that is a more heavily researched topic.
It sounds like everybody's trying to do the volume block right now. Like
because I've said this, but it's because that is what Keegan has done for the past 2 years is he's implemented volume blocks. And I mean, look at, you know, it, whoever's winning, it's just, everybody looks at what they do and tries to copy it, which, you know, and we've had this conversation a million times at this point, but that is, if you want to know the reason why people are trying to do this volume block periodization thing, it's because that is what Keegan has been doing. That's for crazy. The past 2 years.
Keegan is influencing mm-hmm. like, I don't want to say an entire country, but like he's influencing hundreds of other athletes to train. This is gonna sound bad, to train more than what they can, which is almost like working even better for him, because then they're going to be easier to beat because they're going to be so smoked from trying to replicate his training. Like, it's hilarious. Like,
potentially, but there are going to be some people that are able to handle it and end up getting faster as a result.
Right.
True. Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Can't just say everybody isn't as good as Keegan. There's probably some people that are pretty good.
Well, just as an example, and we're getting into a rabbit hole right now, but just as an example, the whole Lifetime Grand Prix field got faster last year. And I don't think that it's a fluke. I think that everyone in the Grand Prix, with few exceptions, was training more than they ever had.
Yeah. With that said, it might very well be Keegan who's inspiring all these people to do higher volume, but we've all said it. Like, in a nutshell, what's one thing that can make you better? More volume.
It's just that when you're getting smoked by the guy that's doing all the volume, you're a little bit more convinced of it.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we got a question here from Chuck. Chuck says, hey, I came across your podcast, and I guess this is a much more dichotomous topic than I knew about. The idea of low-carb nutrition for endurance athletes. It seems the research is sparse. I'm curious if we can get your thoughts on nutrition, specifically carbohydrates versus fat/protein intake, and focus specifically on nutrition for endurance athletes, the performance changes that you can get with this, and then your thoughts on the potential long-term negative health effects of a high carbohydrate diet and endurance athletes for longevity and not just performance in the short term. So basically, you know, Chuck wants to know, you know, what's kind of out there as far as backing the, you know, high carb versus high fat protein diets. You're kind of thinking like traditional endurance, you know, high carb nutrition, and then maybe more like a keto meal plan. And then what are some of the long-term negative health effects that could be associated with either of those?
Sure. Let's chat about this, but I highly recommend, Chuck, that you go back and listen to our 3-part series that we did. How long ago? It was last year.
It was almost a year ago.
But we did 3 shows, one covering each of the macronutrients. So we did an episode on carbs, an episode on protein, an episode on fat, and really kind of did a deep dive into all of those.
Yep.
Yeah, good call. So Chuck says the research is sparse, and I don't agree with that. I don't think the research is sparse. I think it's pretty conclusive. And what I mean by that is that there have been plenty of studies that look into whether or not carbohydrates improve performance, and shockingly, they do. And it's really not controversial, despite what, I don't know, some keto. I don't know if Chuck is a keto fan or not. I assume that since he's asking the question, he's at least curious about it. This is what I'll say. There has been a carbohydrate revolution. A lot of people have actually been using that term, carbohydrate revolution, in the past couple of years with endurance sports, where in the past, endurance athletes have been doing, I don't know, you know, 30 or 40 grams of carbs an hour, just trying to get by. And because endurance sports are usually sports where being lightweight is an advantage, endurance athletes have been very hesitant to overdo it with the amount of carbohydrates that they're taking in on the bike. until the past couple of years when we've had research come out about how important carbohydrate intake is. And now it seems like it's the complete opposite. Everybody's bragging about how many carbs they're able to consume while they're racing. And, you know, we're pushing over 100 grams of carbohydrates per hour. If you listen to some triathletes, it gets absolutely ridiculous the number of carbohydrates they're able to tolerate per hour. And that has resulted in faster times, bigger power outputs, fitter riders, faster recovery, all of it. There's no downsides. It's just people have gotten
probably healthier athletes too, at least.
Yeah, I mean, you could. So I wanted to get into the health component of it. But you could make that argument, because actually there is research to show that the higher carbohydrate availability that you have, the less likely you are to get sick during training. So athletes have gotten faster and stronger as a result of increasing their carbohydrate intake. And I would say that keto and fasted training was kind of a thing in endurance sports, maybe 5-ish years ago, maybe more at this point. And a lot of riders were talking about fasted training. A lot of riders were talking about doing keto. And I would say that at this point, amongst serious competitors, you're always going to find an outlier, or you're going to find some example of some keto athlete. But I would say amongst serious competitors, that mentality has really died off. There are not serious competitors doing the keto diet, and I would say there are increasingly fewer athletes doing even fasted training. You can still find some riders doing fasted training, but I would say it gets fewer and fewer every year that are seriously doing fasted training on a regular basis. So again, I don't think that carbohydrates for performance, I don't think the research is controversial, to be honest with you. And then I guess the other side of this question was, okay, well, carbohydrates are good for performance, but am I improving my performance to the detriment of my long-term health, right? That's the other concern. And that's a question that I also have with such a huge increase in these are simple carbohydrates that you're consuming, and they're in such large quantities. And normally, like I would not like be that.
We were literally talking about guzzling maple syrup. Like, you don't do that. Like, you don't do that for longevity. You
right, do that exactly.
for short-term gains. And like, it's it is kind of scary. But
so when you're doing it, when you're exercising, your body is using those carbohydrates immediately as they come in. So there is an argument that it's not detrimental to your long-term health because you're immediately using those carbohydrates. If you were to drink 90 grams of carbohydrates just sitting on the couch, and you did that every single day when you were just sitting on the couch, that would be detrimental for your long-term health.
A soda
that would be bad.
I think one can of soda has like roughly 60 grams of carbs in it.
Sure. So we're talking about more carbohydrates than a soda.
Or if people drink two sodas a day, that's
right. So that is detrimental for your long-term health.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's detrimental to your long-term health. Consuming it while riding, I think traditionally people have said, okay, well, you're using it immediately, so it's not detrimental. I would be very interested to see research about specifically consuming this high amount of carbohydrates, because we're talking about some riders are seriously pushing the levels of carbohydrates really high. And I actually am curious whether or not pushing it that high does have some sort of long-term negative health outcome. And I'll be honest, I just don't know the answer to that question right now.
Well, I think a part of what's scary, I don't know how old this guy is, but he may have gone, and I think we've all seen that fad of like carbs are bad and sugar is bad. And that's just a bad way of thinking about it. Carbs are bad and sugar are bad if you don't use them, because then they just like sit in your system. And at the end of the day, they get I think at the end of the day, all the carbs in your body that don't get used get converted to fat. And so if people eat a bunch of carbs during the day and then they all get converted to fat, you got a bunch, and there's all kinds of health, obviously negative health effects from too many carbs. But that's when you're too many carbs versus the in comparison to the amount that you're burning. But like Dylan's point,
I would also add that not all carbs are the same. So carbohydrates from these drink mixes and from candy and from sugar and white bread is not the same thing as you know, whole unprocessed carbohydrates. And whole unprocessed carbohydrates are generally found to be healthy, even though it's a carbohydrate. If you go to some circles, you know, you even mention carbohydrates and everybody is wincing at, you know, how unhealthy it is. But whole unprocessed carbohydrates are usually found to be healthy.
Like literally, that's what fruit and vegetables are made up of.
Exactly. Like, right.
Carbohydrates. So they're paired and fiber. With fiber. Yeah. Carbohydrates which is, and fiber. Good.
Yeah. Like both of those things are so good for you. How could you argue that vegetables and fruit are bad for you? And that's the main thing that are in them, carbs and fiber.
Sure. I think that this guy is probably specifically nitpicking the fact that certain riders are doing 120 grams of carbs per hour while they do their training. And is there some sort of long-term negative health impact of doing that?
I would say like the Gustav Edens and the Christian Blumenfelds that are doing these like absurd amount of grams of carbs per hour are also wearing CGMs, and they're being closely monitored. And had there been some adverse effect in the hours after that high consumption, they wouldn't still be doing it. But because they're, like Dylan said, those carbs are immediately being utilized. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. You know, in 20 years, we might figure out that it was terrible on our intestine or whatever. But I don't think it's detrimental.
Yeah, I mean, we're also talking elite professional athletes that are getting paid to do this, that are chasing the most marginal of gains, and
who are probably, you know, who are probably,
we've seen it in a lot of sports. I mean, they'll do whatever it takes, even if the known long-term longevity is detrimented. I mean, like we don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but
yeah,
we all know that there are certain substances that athletes will subject themselves to for performance gains. And in this case here, I mean, if you can train your body to consume 180 grams of carbs an hour and you're going to get a performance boost out of that, like, yeah, seems like a sure thing for professional athletes. I think we won't know what the long-term effect is probably for a handful of years at least, because it's still such a new topic.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're seeing now that the terrible effects that what was once popular, the Atkins diet, is now having, you know, that was a diet based off of, you know, bacon and high cholesterol foods. And that has all kinds of arterial effects. That lead to heart disease and
that's such
high amounts of plaque buildup. And
that's kind of like the keto diet that this guy is asking about. I have a sneaking suspicion that Chuck is considering the keto diet if he's asking this question. And I would say don't do it, both for your health and both for your performance.
Yeah. One of the main, like when you were reading his question or right after you got done reading his question, the one word that popped up to my mind was quality. Like it's easy to like look at carbs, like exactly what Dylan said, and say, you look at what people are eating when they're on the bike and you think low quality. But if you look at everything that they're eating off the bike, hopefully it's high quality.
Yeah.
And that's the big difference, is the quality of those carbs.
Yeah. And I would say balance. You know, these fad diets come out where they try to cut out one of the macronutrients, but proteins, fats, and carbs are all building blocks, very important things that the body needs. Fats play huge role in hormone production. Protein, obviously, that goes without saying. Repair muscles, carbohydrates, brain health. I mean, so you need all of them in balance.
I would read, if you want to do some more research, Chuck. Is it Chuck? I think it's Chuck.
Yeah, Chuck.
Still Chuck. You should read Racing Weight by Matt Fitzgerald. It's like the easiest book to read on sports nutrition for endurance athletes. I'm not a huge fan of the title of the book, Racing Weight, because it implies, I don't know, I feel like there's a lot of negative connotations with that phrase, racing weight, but the content in the book is super good.
Agreed.
And he has a whole, his book is a 6-step process. And one of his steps is eat carbs, a whole chapter on eat carbs.
Sweet. Well, let's wrap it up there. Thanks, guys.
Sweet.
Catch y'all next week.
All right. Sweet. Yeah, is that a pun, Dylan? Did you just make a pun? Cause we're talking about sweet. Carbs.
Sweet.
I like it.
All right, folks, thanks for tuning in for the latest episode of the Matchbox Podcast. Like I said at the beginning, you can send any questions or topic suggestions to matchboxpod@gmail.com with email titled The Matchbox Podcast. Links to each of our social media pages can be found in the show notes. Tune in next week for another endurance training related discussion and learn more about how you can find that extra match for your next big event. Catch y'all soon. Let's go.
Do you feel undertrained, overtrained, burnt out, or just plain unmotivated to complete workouts? We understand, and we want to help. Cookie cutter training plans just don't get the job done like a real life coach. A training plan can't adjust when things go sideways, and a training plan doesn't hold you accountable when you slack off. A training plan can't motivate you before a big race. Only a coach can do these things. Get the most out of yourself with coaching that works. Sign up for a free consultation with an Ignition coach today, and let's get to work.